Still here, yep.
Okay, right on. Well, a bit of an adventure, as is sometimes the case in the age of modern mobile phones and getting new carriers and phone lines.
Yes, exactly right.
But, you know, I guess a communication device is one of the many tools you need when you're working in the garden.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I think I can use this. This is an extra sturdy waterproof phone, so I think I can use it for whacking slugs and other stuff too. So, but I haven't tried that yet since it's a brand new phone.
Good.
Maybe after we get off, I'll let you know.
Yeah, exactly. Well, how are things going? What's the latest?
Good. Well, we've got a dry, cloudy, moist, dry day at the moment. It's not raining now, which is good enough for me. Just delivering a tree. But I've had folks asking me lately about collecting seeds.
Yeah.
Seeds for, and this includes vegetable seeds and flower seeds. Some stuff we're almost a little too late for. Other stuff we're pretty much on time for. So we're okay there. And depending on what you want, what kind of stuff you're looking for, these can work. So today I already collected some monk's hood, some tall stems of monk's hood that are, they're close to being ripe. And so for some seeds, you know, you may be able to just pick them at the perfect time right in the garden. And of course, but with the weather that we have, sometimes the perfect weather is not perfect for seed collection. So we may collect them a little early before they are fully ripe. We can put them into the equivalent of a vase or a bucket of water to finish ripening in a greenhouse, in your hoop house, in the house, in your garage, whatever. And other stuff we'll pick, and then we just spread them out in a box or a tub or something like that, so we can let them dry out so we can then extract the seeds. And some plants, for example, right now there's some of the early blooming poppies are already ripe. The seed pods are brown and opening. Those need to be harvested immediately. There's others like my blue poppies. They're still have green pods. They're not ready. As well as I was looking at out at the Jensen Olsen Arboretum, they have lots and lots of the annual, what we call opium poppies. That's really what they are. And they, too, are very green. And some folks will even collect those to use as an ornamental addition to flower arrangements. But again, those are the ones that we would collect as they get close, starting to turn brown. And once they dry out and they've got kind of it's a weird looking thing. But anyway, they've got kind of a cap on top. And there will be all these little holes around, kind of underneath this cap, where the seeds will then get where you can shake them out when they're ripe. Well, those are the ones you actually can use to make poppy seed muffins and poppy seed rolls and that sort of thing.
Uh-huh.
So that's kind of a nice thing too. But you might want to be a little careful if you are subject to random drug testing, because they can give you a false positive,
right,
or whatever. So you know, a little caution there at least. But so you've got to learn to recognize, you need to know what you're collecting so that you can label them, and, you know, when they grow, they aren't, you know, you throw these things out and something grows out of your pots or trays or whatever and say, well, I wonder what this was that I collected.
Right.
So if you have them labeled ahead, or maybe it's good to take pictures in your garden,
mm-hmm,
so that can connect to the seed pods that you're collecting.
Right.
And then, I suppose we say this about every other time we talk, but record keeping. So you know, either you check last year or the year before's records, say, when did I pick those seeds, were they ripe in my garden, if you did.
Right.
Or you say, okay, I'm checking on today, whatever today is, 22nd or 23rd of August, and I can see that the primula japonicas, those are ripe. The poppies are not quite ready. You know, let's check back in a week or two. And then the wild iris, those is going to be another 3 weeks to a month maybe before those are ripe. And for some of these different ones, if the seed pods hold up well in the weather, like the wild iris are a great example. I've collected those in December.
Wow.
You know, out there at the edge of the marshy areas or the upper edges of the wetlands.
Mm.
And And those seeds are perfectly fine. They've been chilled. You can take them, just shake them out onto a tray of soil, put a little more soil on top of them, and plant them. I mean, and just set them back outside. Mm-hmm. And then they get their freeze-thaw action that they need to germinate.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
You know, so timing matters. Definitely matters for the different varieties. So you just have to become attuned, just like with everything else. You know, when do the first, first berries show up? When does this or that happen in your garden? Well, when are these seeds going to be ripe? And, of course, this year is different than last year, which is different from the year before.
Mm-hmm. Right. And you can kind of, as in the course of a year, if you've been staying attuned, you can probably have a sense of maybe when a thing is going to be closer to ready relative to recent years. Like if it was a very dark spring and things started a couple weeks late, then probably is it right to assume that the seed pods readiness for harvest is going to be a little late too? Or
This year it looks pretty close to normal. And of course I'm comparing that to, you know, the ripeness of berries. So we've been picking raspberries.
Yeah.
And like I say, the monkshood are very close. The delphinium seed pods are going to be a little bit later, which is really odd. I mean, it's like they've actually reversed this year.
Mm-hmm.
Normally delphiniums are first and monkshood are later. So again, I don't know how to describe it. It's just that it's, you just have to look at them and, okay, they're not ready this week, so we've got to check again next week and maybe a few more days and then they'll be ready.
Have your
trays and boxes and whatever else you're going to be putting them into.
Yeah.
You know, when you cut them, I'm going to be on my way home today. I've got my empty buckets. I'm going to be cutting stems of lupin seeds.
Ooh.
So that will then take, I mean, they're going to need to dry out anyway to separate, because it's been pretty wet around here. So I'll dry some of those out and extract the seeds from those along with other stuff that I know is coming.
So what's a little short checklist for somebody to have in mind when you're determining, are these seeds ready for harvesting?
So look at the, again, if you know what they're supposed to look like. So for wild iris, are great ones because you have a big, I mean, you know, big, hefty, you know, the size of, just sometimes the size of my thumb, seed pods.
Hmm.
So if you watch those, watch them turning brown along with the plant off, oftentimes will be starting to turn kind of yellowish from nice, healthy, bright green to gradually turning yellowish to brown.
Mm-hmm.
Check the seed pods. Again, those, if they're still holding up, still closed up at the top, wait a while. Wait till some of those seed pods turn fully brown, and then the tops are starting to open up. And then, again, you can pick those. If it's really dry conditions, they may shake right out easily.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not, if it's really wet conditions, then that, you know, you have to take them home and dry those. So columbines, earlier, those I picked some of those. I still get them in my truck. They're kind of pretty dry. But there, I picked those a week and a half ago. And so those seed pods, again, they had turned brown and the tops were starting to open up. And you can peek inside, and there you can see these little shiny black seeds.
Mm-hmm.
So that's perfect timing. And again, not all the seed pods on the plant may be ready at the same time. So again, depending on how long a flowering period they have, kind of like, well, even with those lupins, you know, the bottom seed, the bottom flowers open first, and it may be 2 weeks, a week to 2 weeks before the top ones open.
Right.
Or on foxgloves, exactly the same thing. It might be 2 to 3 weeks even from the bottom flowers opening to the top ones. So there may be ripe seed pods down at the bottom while there's still flowers on top,
right. Maybe. Yeah.
So, you know, you want to pick them. And again, think about that too, that there's going to be, foxglove is a great example, that if you, once you have a few plants and if you don't cut off the flower heads, that if you don't want seeds, then you will have lots and lots and lots. And if you wait too long, you know, the wind blowing the stems back and forth will start to shake out those little seeds because they aren't necessarily that well contained in the something compared to the poppy seed, the poppy pod, or the iris pod.
Right.
You know, some of these kind of open up on the sides, and the wind shakes them, and seeds get shaken out, and you will have foxgloves for the rest of your days. Every time you turn the soil over, kind of like with my kale, you know, I turn the soil over, and kale sprouts.
Yeah, right, exactly. Okay, so that's kind of a good way to think of it then, is like as soon as the plant's kind of natural process would be suggesting that it is about to kind of lay its own seeds at its own feet, you know, kind of like you're saying with the foxglove, as soon as those seeds are ready to be released by the plant itself, it's a great time for you to swoop in and collect those and save those.
Well, look at the fireweed.
Right.
You know, that's a perfect example too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we talk about how when the last fireweed hits the top of the stem, summer's over. Well, yeah, okay. I'm unwilling to concede that summer's over, but we're at that point.
Yeah.
And of course, the lower pods that flowered earlier, which is weeks ago again, those are already turning to fluff and they're floating on the breeze on the dry days at least.
Right.
So, and if you look at those, they will have those tiny, tiny little seeds attached to that fluff.
Yeah.
Which is then off and away they go looking for a bare piece of bare ground to drop into and to sprout.
Totally. Yeah, that's so interesting, you know, to think about the plants we're living amongst in terms of this stage of their development, you know, their life cycle. That like,
well, look at dandelions. I mean, they're fascinating too. You can, you know, when dandelions bloom in the springtime, and some of us, well, you know, you don't want more dandelions in your yard, so you just pull the dandelion flower heads off.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you don't put them into a container or do something with those, you just drop them on the ground, they will continue to ripen, and if the weather is even a little bit damp or dry on the dry side, you know, they'll ripen right there on the ground, and that's the fluff and the seeds, and they'll still be ready to go.
Wow.
So again, if you think about your deadheading process, if you really, really want them, don't necessarily throw them in the compost,
right,
because you may be just seeding your compost.
Totally. Yeah, that was my thinking when I went on a little anti-cow parsnip tirade around my property today.
Yes, definitely.
You know, the bees in the area love those big flat beds of white flowers on top of the parsnip, and so I...
They do. They pollinate them extremely well. They make lots of seeds. So then, you want to have something like a bucket or a box or a garbage bag or whatever that you're collecting those into, then to dispose of them appropriately.
Yeah, you don't want to just let those do their thing, because they will lay so many seeds right there, and... Yeah, so I just kind of let the bees hang out, have a little fun time on those flower, tons of flowers on those.
Yes,
and then
great, and they're great. Yeah, they are really good for bees. They have nectar in them and pollen, you know, both of which they need to make more bees. And, of course, we always need more bees.
Right.
So, yeah, so it's a timing issue that if you are deadheading, you know, when do you do that? Or, you know, I've been picking all of these, I've got them in my truck for delivery, nasturtiums flowers to be used, well, to sell to local folks who add them to their salads and stuff.
Right.
And, of course, in that process, these are annuals. So with annuals, that's their whole goal in life, is to produce seeds, and then they die.
Right.
And, of course, if we keep picking off the flowers, we're deadheading them, or picking the flowers in this case, we're eating them, then they are stimulated to produce more flowers.
Mm-hmm.
With your perennials, they will produce a stem or a stalk of flowers, or several of them, depending on the size of the plant, and then that's all they will produce.
Right.
So, but again, if you are not wanting to collect seed, not wanting to save seed, or, you know, to make lots more flowers or plants on the cheap, then getting them off means the plant is not using so much energy to make seeds. It takes a lot of energy to do that.
Mm-hmm.
Then the plant, your perennials, will generally be healthier, and they'll store up more food for next year, so that you hopefully have an even better flowering crop next year.
Yeah. Well, I'm still thinking about those parsnips. I let them go all the way to seed, use up all their energy for next year, and then deadheaded them all before the seeds got ripe, put them in the garbage bin, and, you know, knock down those stems, and this year I'll put, like, nice black fabric over them and hopefully never see those darn things ever again. But, yeah, so that was close as I came to saving seeds this season. But
the other thing to think about, we mentioned about using the the opium poppy seeds for eating. Well, I know some folks here in town, and you may have heard of this too, that they will allow the nasturtium seeds to start to develop. Now, again, and for this, you want green seeds rather than fully ripe seeds if you're wanting to save them for planting. But they'll take the green seeds and pickle them like capers.
Ooh.
So the salt and vinegar and whatever spices, probably garlic would be good, I suppose. I haven't had them yet, but I was told about somebody who's a friend who's supposed to come and get some cabbages from me. So I'm going to ask her about those and just to taste, to try.
Wow.
See how those go for that. Again, for I've got kale, you know, we're talking about flowers primarily, but the kale and spinach, both of those I saved seeds from. So the kale, well, both of those were planted last year, like in September, and the kale and spinach overwintered. So the spinach bolted first early, and so I've saved the female plants. They're separate plants, so they have male and female plants in spinach. Those, and I'll have to pull to strip the seeds off the stems of those. And, Chuck, I'll be replanting next month. The kale seeds, again, those are turning brown, so they, from the flowering, the yellow flowers, then you get these elongated, almost like tiny, thin diameter bean pods, sort of.
Right.
And those, again, you watch those, and as they turn from green to brown, then, and I have some that are ready to pick now, and I'm going to try to be careful, because what I find is if they are fairly ripe, they easily split open and spill their seeds out.
Right.
Again, that's why I have so much kale. So then I, you know, and from there, I probably won't have quite as much as I have had. Other years I've had, literally one or two garbage cans full of kale stems full of seeds, and from which I can extract sometimes a pint to a quart of kale seed.
Wow.
And so again, that can be used for obviously replanting once it's been dried out and used, but it can also be used for if you want to make kale sprouts, you know, grow sprouts for your own salads. You can do it on trays, which is one of the some folks in town are doing that on these little light, thin pads on moist, that are moistened to grow microgreens.
Right.
Or if you want to put those on a thin, very thin layer of potting soil. Again, you can grow microgreens and then just harvest those off the top with the scissors when they're 2 or 3 or 4 inches tall.
Wow. Yeah, that's a pretty darn cool use of, if you do end up with a larger than necessary volume of kale seeds or any seeds for greens, that's a really cool use of it.
So then the other important thing from here, if you're going to be saving these seeds, so if you're not going to be immediately planting them back, you know, onto seed trays or into, you've got some garden beds that are going to be your nursery beds, you're going to, you know, and literally just, you know, get the clean seeds out a little bit, they can still be damp, sprinkle them on the soil, let nature go with it from there. And next spring they sprout whenever they are ready. But if you want to save them for longer term storage over the winter,
right,
for sharing, for mailing out to friends, or I mean, I sell seeds, and they have to be dry. So you get your seed pods, get them dried, shake them out, like with these in the, these kale seeds in the garbage cans. I will literally take the stems, bang them against the sides of the garbage cans, then pull out the stems, and then I've got a variety of sifters and screens then to get rid of the dry and empty pods.
Right.
And then from there they'll go into some trays. You know, if I've got small quantities of seeds, I've got lots of old pie pans work really well, bread pans work well, cookie sheets, whatever it takes, and then to get the seeds more dry. So if you're going to, I normally save, put seeds, they'll go into various different size jars that I save, and in some cases pint jars and quart jars, that will eventually be go into my spare garage refrigerator. But again, if you don't get those seeds dry enough and you put them into jars or even into plastic bags like Ziploc bags, you can get mold forming on the seeds, and that often will kill the seeds. You know, if they are not dry enough,
yeah,
that's a problem.
So how do you verify for yourself that they're ready for putting into a storage container?
Usually, I mean, I do not have a little machine that I can test the dryness of the seeds. So usually I am bringing them into the house to finish the drying process to where I am satisfied with them. And then I try to get, I winnow the seeds and those pie pans again. Or if you have a bunch of gold pans, again, that's the perfect shape, you know, that tapered pan size. Mm-hmm. So we shake the seeds, normally are heavier. So, and I will either blow across the top or even just literally, it's like panning for gold too. The gold is the heaviest. Well, in this case, the seeds are heavier than the chaff and the former seed pods that you had. Mm-hmm. So you can shake those out. You don't use water, of course. You want this dry, but you can use a, you know, just blow across them, or you can use a small fan again to blow across the top to get that chaff off. And then again, I'll let them stay dry in the house usually for another week or two, mm-hmm. so that they are good and dry. And again, put some in a jar, and if you see moisture or mold forming, well, that's a good indication, or a Ziploc bag, that you didn't dry them well enough. And there, you've probably seen the desiccant packages of stuff that they pack with, usually with vitamins and various other stuff.
Sure.
You can actually buy those. New ones, and or you can reuse them too, but and just dry them out yourself, get them thoroughly dry in the house, or whatever, and put those into the packages or into the jars with seeds to help absorb. And I've also heard of folks using, which I have not done, it's actually taking dry powdered milk and wrapping that, like putting it into making essentially a little envelope with a paper towel or a napkin.
Right.
Have the milk in there and put that into your jar of seeds, which then absorbs moisture from the seeds into the powdered milk.
Wow.
So that's another way to improve, you know, improve your long-term storage. And ideally, you want to do it in the dark. Keep your seeds in a dark place. Again, refrigerator works. Dark envelopes, dark bags, dark jars, I suppose. And even if you get them good and dry, you can also freeze them. That, again, gets risky. Refrigerator, for me, is safer because I don't really know that I have them as dry as they need to be. They could be very dry. They go into the freezer. They can go into long-term storage, but if you still have a little bit of residual moisture there, potentially you can kill that moisture, expands with the freezing process,
right,
and can kill the seeds.
Sure.
So refrigeration, you know, tends to be a little safer. And again, depending on the seed varieties, some store for 3 to 5 years. Some of these, you mentioned cow parsnips, but I am collecting my eating parsnips right now. I have some that overwintered, flowered, went to seed. They look much like the cow parsnips, except their leaves aren't so big, but the seed heads are similar. But I'm saving those. And even with fresh seed, they seldom last 2 years.
Hmm.
So you pretty much have to either buy new seed or save new seed from those. Where the kale seeds, that works good, last 3 years.
Right.
Tomato seeds, say if you've got a good non-hybrid, open-pollinated tomato, you can save those seeds. And they can last for, I've planted 20-year-old tomato seeds. They're incredibly durable.
Wow.
That's a little different. You know, if you're saving seeds from fruit, with tomatoes particularly, there they say to take a really nice ripe tomato of that variety that you want, or a couple of them, and mush them in a jar, and leave them to, put a lid on the jar, and leave that mush to ferment. The fermentation, and you'll actually usually get mold growing on top of the liquid there that you have, which is okay. And the good seeds will tend to settle to the bottom of the liquid. And then after you've allowed them to ferment a while, and this fermentation process is actually beneficial to the seeds, then you drain off the liquid and carefully, and you have to have some kind of little screens or colanders or something that you won't lose the seeds down the drain. But you actually gently rinse the seeds off with fresh water, and then put them onto something like a piece of wax paper to dry in the open before you store those away.
Right.
Don't put them on a paper towel because they will stick to it and you won't be able to remove them.
Right.
Unless you just tear up the paper towel and store that along with them to just use the piece of paper towel with a couple seeds on that you would plant in your pots next year.
I suppose so. That's a way to, like, if you happen to make that mistake, you don't have to panic or give up on the seeds. Just recognize that you're going to be planting that little scrap of paper.
So you want to have good, ripe, I mean, I suppose it's kind of like we're talking about the flower seed. You know, your pods need to be ripe. Well, same thing, your fruits need to be nice and ripe when you choose those plants. And again, you might choose fruits. Again, you're going to maybe doing some selection, unnatural selection here.
Right.
So if you think you want to save these, and you know this ahead of time, you might actually want to save the first one or two tomatoes that come in the hopes of, usually what we want is earlier tomatoes around here.
Oh, true.
Choose the first few fruit, leave them on there, and maybe you might tie a little piece of ribbon or something on those that tells you these are the ones I'm saving.
Right.
You know, don't pick them. Let them ripen till they get pretty soft before you pick them and then mash them up in your jars where you're going to be fermenting them.
Uh-huh. So you want to basically let them get as ripe as possible on the vine before you pick them for the purpose of seed saving with these tomatoes?
Yes.
Yeah.
Then there's some really weird stuff that can happen, which I have seen. And I've actually seen where you open up a tomato, and sometimes you'll have them just with a ripe tomato. I've seen these with tomatoes you buy from the store even. You'll actually get sprouting seeds in the tomato.
Yeah.
I mean, even in a normally ripe tomato, there may be seeds that are already starting to sprout, growing inside the tomato.
Wow.
And I don't know that there's anything positive about that you can do with that, necessarily. But just something weird that happens, and like with these kale seeds, if I'm not careful and the seed pods start to open up, and of course it's very damp, you know, high humidity, I've seen the kale seeds sprouting right there in the pod. So I'll have this little line of, you know, 20 kale seedlings, you know, little leaves starting to grow right out of the splitting pod.
Wow.
Those need to be planted immediately, of course, because
yeah.
you can't dry them and save them.
Right.
So just interesting stuff that can happen. That one year I was trying to save some, I saw there was from along the roadside, they were using the straw for erosion control. So I thought, oh well, I want to collect some of these, and then some of it grew because there's always some seeds in there. So there were pods, or not pods, there were heads of, I believe it was barley, as near as I can recall. So I went back, I was watching them to try to pick them in the hopes of collecting some of those seeds. Well, the same thing happened. Just because it's so damp, they started to sprout in the heads rather than completely drying out as they ripened. So again, it's a close thing, you know. With the perennial seeds, at least, usually they need that extra cold and damp conditions over the winter. But with the annuals, they may sprout very quickly, sooner than you want them to.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So that's the danger of letting them stay on the plant for too long in a place that's moist. You know, this time of year, when you would theoretically be harvesting seeds, it's a very moist time of year.
Exactly right. So again, yeah, getting them out, ideally if you can harvest them on a dry day as opposed to a day that's raining, so you're a little bit ahead of the game, and then bring them inside to dry out the rest of the way.
So if you cut a stem with seeds on it, and maybe they're not at total optimum ripeness or readiness, do you want to put the stem in water to, like, give the plant more sort of life to finish ripening,
or do you
want to just start
drying? You can do that, and you can also do it the other way and just cut the whole stem off, even without any water, in a, you know, if you're keeping these in a bucket or something like that. And it's like at least some of those seeds, some of the pods, may still be able to pull the final bit of nutrient they need out of the stems to finish their ripening process. Maybe not all of them, you know, if you've got a long stem of, say, lupin pods on there, that some of them won't ripen. So, but, I mean, you're going for getting as many as you can, depending on your timing.
Okay, so the ripening process is still driven by energy generated by the plant.
Yes,
for the most part.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, yes, that's a good point, and you know, and then the weather certainly, and the day length, of course, helps trigger the finishing blooming and the ripening process also.
Right. Okay. Well, that is a really interesting and valuable thing to be thinking about, you know, this time of season in the garden. And those are great great viewpoints and kind of reminders about how to best achieve this practice of, you know, paying attention to the plant, keeping an eye on it, getting your timing right, and then also, you know, making the best use of those seeds as far as drying them successfully, really making sure that they're ready to store. You hate to do all that work and then get impatient in that last step of drying them and then, you know, waste the whole effort and ruin all the seeds by letting them mold in your jar or anything like that. So
yep.
Give them time.
Been there and done that.
Yeah. You don't recommend, like, using heat to sort of dehydrate them at all. You want to let them
really
kind of air dry.
No,
right?
If you go online and do that, no, they say room temperature up to maybe, you know, 80s, maybe 90s, perhaps. So you'd have to be very careful with that. Mm-hmm. But again, the other danger, if you get them so dry that they, what do I want to say? It's like a germination inhibitor.
Right.
So it's difficult, more difficult to break the germination when you want them to grow. So that's where sometimes, at least with some seeds, and there's books and books written on this. You know, the ideal temperatures for drying, for storage, and for then germinating again. Mm-hmm. And then how much time or some certain kinds of things may take a warm, moist period, and then a cold, moist period, and then another warm, moist period. It'll actually go, like the equivalent of 2 years, to break their dormancy.
Wow.
So you can excessively dry seeds and force them into deeper dormancy. So you're better, again, I think, based on what I've seen and accomplished, just dry them out at room temperature. Yeah, it takes a little longer and stuff. But I think it's a little safer.
Makes sense. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds right. You know, I mean, we can kind of sort of trust the plants to be good at surviving and reproducing. And so if we keep our own sort of partnering up with their life cycle that way, relatively in the wheelhouse of the plant, you know, don't put them into super extreme conditions that are totally outside of its normal environment.
Right, exactly. Yeah, cool and moist around here.
Yeah.
That works. Of course, yeah, we've got all of these exotic plants that we're trying to save seeds from. So, again, some of them have different requirements. So there's lots of research is out there available. Certainly you can do web search on germination of certain kinds of primulas and or how to do. Some plants need darkness. You know, a certain amount of moist, cool, moist, dark to germinate. Other plants, you don't even want to, you know, cover up the seed. You leave them on the surface because they actually need light to germinate. So, again, a lot of different interesting conditions for some.
Yeah. Well, great. And that maybe is a good note to leave it on. And it kind of makes me think about this weekend, you know, now that we're getting some rain and we're getting to be that time of year, I'll probably be out there wandering around in the forest looking for some, you know, choice edible mushrooms to forage up, but probably borderlands.
I was just thinking about chanterelles myself.
Ooh, oh,
so,
yeah.
That would be nice.
That's the blessing of the rain after a nice dry summer. We haven't had, there hasn't been much fruiting of the mycelium yet, but oh, there will be. I know it.
Okay.
And so
good luck. Hope you find some and eat them safely.
Yeah.
Make the right choices.
Oh, yes. Always be careful. And maybe while we're out there, keep an eye out for seed pods from wildflowers there at the edges of the meadows, and grab those while you're there, too.
Yes. Okay.
Okay. Well, until next week, Ed, thank you so much for all that great insight. And, as always, learn a lot from talking in the garden. Till next time.
All right. Bye, Orin.
What a treat. How lucky we are to be able to pick the brain of Ed Byarsky, the master gardener for this region, and great advice about saving seeds this year. And till next week, we'll keep it going. And we want to thank the Flower Farm, of course, for helping support this program. And they have bouquets available for delivery. Actually, their phone number 772-3464. They're out there at 6 Rory's Road, Papke's Landing. And I just got an update on that muskeg message that we've been announcing for you. Message for jurors with jury duty here in August. There is actually no trial next week. So your services are not required this month. We had been letting you know that there was likely or possibly a trial, and the new update is no trial next week. So your next call-in is Wednesday, September 19th after 6 p.m. Cool. All right. Well, we are about to hand things over to Lars Christensen for High Country. It's coming up next. Stay tuned. And then NPR's All Things Considered at 4 and your local news at 4:30. Be without homegrown tomatoes. Only two things that money can't buy, and that's true love and homegrown tomatoes. Now if I was to change this life I lead, well I'd be Johnny Tomato Seed. Cause I know what this country needs. It's homegrown tomatoes in every yard you see. When I die, don't bury me in a box in a cemetery. Out in the garden, be much better. And I could be pushing up homegrown tomatoes. Homegrown tomatoes, homegrown tomatoes. What'll life be without homegrown tomatoes? Only two things that money can't buy.